From KCRW, this is Here Be Monsters.
We are in the LeBeau Research Natural Area on the Flathead National Forest. And it's special because it's got all this great wildlife that's been lost in much of the rest of the country that we'll talk about more.
Good deal.
This winter, I was back in my hometown, Kalispell, Montana. It's probably been a decade since I had spent New Year's Eve there. I was craving snow. My friend Jesse had just moved back home. He's a radio producer, too, and he helped me make this episode. Jesse's also the older brother of my friend Aaron, who I interviewed for episode 64.
Focused on the thinness as an inherently attractive quality. Even though I knew my skin looked sunken, my hair looked horrible, I looked awful. People, everyone who encountered me, who had known me as a larger person, said, "You look amazing.
In 2017, Erin died after being hit by a car. I was at the hospital with her family the night she died. I haven't really been sure how to talk about her and her death on this show, but I think about her all the time. I think about Jesse all the time, too, because Erin was just one of many of his immediate family members who all died within a year and 2 months of each other. And recently, I've been talking to Jesse a lot about grief. Kalispell's a small town, and Jesse suggested I contact his next-door neighbor, Ben Long. Ben also knew Aaron. He writes for a living, not about grief, but about conservation. He has an affinity for caribou. They used to be plentiful across the continental United States, but now they've mostly disappeared. We chose a sunny day in January, and Jesse and I drove Ben out to the Flathead National Forest to look for caribou tracks. It had snowed a lot in previous days, but the morning sun warmed up enough that the trees were dripping melt onto the wet snow. It almost sounds like a campfire in the recordings we made. You'll hear that really delicate crackling sound. We parked near a trailhead, grabbed our sack lunches, and headed out to talk about caribou and the long process of mourning what's gone.
There's wolves, there's wolverines, there's lynx, there's grizzly bears, moose. And just west of here, a couple months ago, people saw a pair of caribou, woodland caribou, which are literally on the edge of extinction. Those two caribou they saw might be the very last caribou in the lower 48 states. I don't think there's anybody who wants to be the person who pushed caribou, you know, into extinction. But together we made the decisions to change the land that did that.
Oh yeah, which way do we want to go here?
Did anybody take a picture of the map? Up there, they're going to go that way, but I'm okay. Not sure.
Yeah, that looks like it spits you out right where the cliffs are.
Yeah, right.
In theory, we're walking to a lake called Finger Lake, but it's rather snowy, and we'll see.
Here Be Monsters, the podcast about
how much of yourself you lose when you lose someone.
The podcast about
the unknown.
This is a western larch tree here, probably about 200 years old. And you can see how, like, it has a lot of that moss up high. It's called arboreal lichen. Its a common name is old man's beard because it looks like an old man's beard. But this grows on the trees, and this is like the primary food for caribou. They survive on this kind of lichen that other animals like elk and deer and moose can't survive on. And this kind of lichen really grows well in old forests. And so when the old forests go, there's much fewer like, and so can't support the caribou. The caribou can't live there.
The winter after Aaron died, I went to the Woodland Park Zoo in Seattle. They had a couple of caribou visiting, and they told the kids that they were Santa's reindeer. I stopped to chat with one of the zookeepers. She told me about how both male and female caribou grow antlers, how the antlers are covered in a fine layer of fur, and how there's blood that courses through them. And she told me that about once a year, caribou will start to detach from their antlers and eventually drop them. In fact, the zookeeper told me, they were supposed to have a different caribou named Lucky visiting this year, but Lucky had just recently had a miscarriage and dropped her antlers unexpectedly. In my memory, the zookeeper told me that Lucky had dropped her antlers out of sadness, such was her grief. But I don't think she actually said that. I think I heard something that I wanted to be true, that grief has a physical manifestation for all animals, not just the ones that can cry or hold funerals. And so my mishearing stuck, and half a year later, I drove all the way out to a reindeer farm to ask a farmer about it. He told me that all caribou drop their horns. Most of them do it in the fall. New mothers will do it in the spring. It's just a normal hormonal change. So Lucky's loss of antlers wasn't unnatural in any way, except for the fact that it happened suddenly, and in the middle of winter. I told Jesse about all this, and that's when he told me to get in touch with Ben.
To me, you know, mourning is a pain response to a broken bond. Just like breaking a leg is a pain response to a broken bone. It's like we have these bonds to different people. When those bonds are broken, you feel this pain. We also bond with places, and when those places change, it's painful. And I think we bond with the natural world.
The thing I didn't anticipate was how much of yourself you lose when you lose someone. Memories,
yep.
Shared experiences,
yep.
And shared language. There's a piece of me I don't know how to get in touch with anymore. I've lost something. So it's always really hard to know how to say it.
Yeah.
About 2 years ago, my family started dying. Summer of 2016, my dad was diagnosed with cancer. Fall of 2016, my mom was diagnosed with cancer. She was very sick very quickly, ended up dying in April of that year. And then 2 months later, in June of 2017, my sister Erin was struck by a car in Portland, Oregon. And after 3 weeks in the ICU, she passed away. And then in July of 2017, the day before my sister's funeral, my grandpa passed away. And then in June of 2018, my dad passed away from cancer as well. And Ben, there's some little tracks here. What do you think those are?
They're hard to tell because they're kind of melted and then been snowed on. But I think those are probably white-tailed deer, judging by the size of them and the size of the stride. And every time it steps into the snow, it sinks all the way to the bottom. Whereas a caribou has a similar hoof, but it's like a pie plate, it's round. And that would allow the caribou to walk on top of the snow. So over the course of a year you lost?
Basically, they all died within about the span of a year and 2 months.
Well, and Ben, you had a relationship with each of these people as well.
Right, right. So I was friends with both of Jesse's parents, and Aaron was our son Aiden's first babysitter and almost a member of the family in that way. And so, yeah, it was a period of loss, rapid, unexpected loss for our family as well. Months and months afterwards, after the funeral, come, you know, turning down the block and see Aaron's car, and just kind of that instant moment of, oh, Aaron's home, Aaron's back. And just have that very painful instant of realization is, no, it's just the car. Aaron's not back, and Aaron's not coming back. It's almost like a rude jolt to the system every time.
I also had a relationship with Aaron, also had a relationship with your mom, Kathy. A really strange thing that I never could have anticipated, and it still is surprising to me, is having to kind of talk through, like, but where did they go? But where are, like, where, but where did Aaron go? And having to walk through, like, well, her body was cremated and now her body is ash. And I felt almost childlike and having to have that conversation with myself.
Mm-hmm. You do have to phrase it that way to yourself somehow. You have to be like, that's not going to happen. I mean, and it makes me think of something that kind of connects back to the animals. The philosopher Wittgenstein has a line where he says, if a lion could talk, we couldn't understand it. Because language is an inseparable part of a way of consciousness and a way of thinking. And a lion's way of doing that, even if it had language, quote unquote, like we do, our brains just are processing information differently. And I think about that with death, because our brains are designed to frame everything in the context of being alive. Right. And so it's like when someone dies, you don't have the language or often even the concepts for that. I think we're coming near the cliffs of the lake. Should we keep walking? What's that, Ben?
My metaphor about grieving being a process without a trail, but we're using the trail, so that's good.
Grieving is a trail that is snowed over, so you can walk it, but your feet get wet.
Look at that old larch. That's probably more of a 400 or 500-year-old tree there. You can see the top's been broken off, but then it sprouted again, a second top. So that's just a magnificent tree. For around here, that's about as old as the tree gets.
Ooh, mountain lion?
No. That's a gray wolf.
Really?
No way.
Yep. If you look, one, it's big, so it's much bigger than a coyote track, and it's got claw marks on the top. Mountain lions keep their claws inside their paws until they're attacking, like a cat, but dogs have their claws out all the time, so you can see the four claw marks on the tip of the toes. So that tells me that's a wolf. And that's a fresh track. Maybe we can get him to howl.
How would we do that?
We pretend to be wolves. I think my relationship with grief, for me, changed about 10 years ago. my wife and I, Karen, we have a boy who was born in 2004. And for the first 4 years of his life, grew in a normal, happy, healthy way. He was a smart, adorable, precocious little boy. And I have all kinds of hopes and dreams for him, as any father does. And on the evening of October 28, 2008, he was sitting at the kitchen table and he tipped over. And at first I thought he choked on something. So I gave him the Heimlich maneuver and called 911. I thought he died. His lips turned blue. He had blood coming out of his mouth. What had happened is he'd had an epileptic seizure, and it very rapidly developed into a very catastrophic form of epilepsy. And now Aiden's 14 and he's a wonderful young man, but is devastated by millions of seizures. And I remember when he was about 5, we were in Seattle for some tests, and I remember the nurse saying, well, you need to take time to mourn. And my initial response to that, well, fuck you, is fuck you, because my son is not dead. What are you talking about? And later on, I came to realize that even though my son hadn't died, my idealized version of my son was gone. You know, the idea of seeing his high school graduation, of seeing his marriage, of being a grandfather, all that was gone. And so it did start a mourning process and a grief process, even though it wasn't associated with the death of my son, because he's still alive. He's been on death's door many times, he's been put on hospice twice, but he's a fighter and keeps surviving. But that loss and the pain and the grief took up a much larger part of my life. I mean, I think back to one day when Aiden was very sick, was having out of control seizures, and we'd been life flighted down to the hospital in Denver. And they, over the course of 3 weeks, put him into a medically induced coma. And it basically gave him so much Pentobarb that his brain function was zero. We had to put moisture in his eyes because he couldn't produce tears. He was that way for several days. It didn't work. It was a devastating experiment on him physically. After we came out of that, the seizures were just out of control. And I was alone with him in the hospital, in the dark, every half hour, just racked with another big, violent, ugly seizure. And that was the first time they put him on hospice and just basically sent him home with us, because the doctors had nothing left to do. At that stage, it's really hard to see God as anything other than just like a big child abuser. And I remember feeling like, just fucking get it over with, God. If you're gonna torture him to death, just do it. Don't drag this out. And it's a very strange place for a parent to be basically praying for your own kid's death, because it was just so hard to see him suffer like that. And I think I can kind of forgive myself for those feelings at that time. But in the years since then, Aiden and I and Karen went on our first backpacking trip with him, and I helped him catch his first fish. And his life is very different than the idealized life I imagined. And I don't, it's not like I'm looking for like the silver lining in the cloud or to pull something good from that. But I'm grateful for that. I'm grateful that God said, no, you know, we're gonna, you tough it out, because it did give us more time. Because you never know what time you got. I remember when I read in the paper and about the last caribou and how they were pretty much functionally extinct. I mean, it was like a mourning process for that, a mourning process for like the loss of nature and the loss of wild nature that those caribou represented.
Is this painful to be here?
No, I mean, I think it's it's kind of sad. It's got an element of sadness to it, but it's definitely not painful. It's definitely part of the, for me, part of the healing process.
Oh, wow. Wow, look at that. We are at the lake.
Yay.
Beautiful. Should we have a little lunch down here on the ledge?
Yeah, on the ledge here.
Whoa. Yeah. Your smush sandwich, and this is my smush sandwich.
Hey, Mom used to make. The cookies are
intact. Yeah, wow, it's nice out.
When I was a kid, I read a lot of Jack London books. This part of Montana always reminds me of Alaska, you know, the dark spruce and wolf tracks and moose. You know, we talk about how people mourn differently and grieve differently. One thing I learned from your parents is also how they face death differently. Like, your mom was, like, so open, posted on the internet. If I didn't have outsiders giving me information, I never would have known your dad was sick. He surprised a lot of people.
That's really interesting to hear you say, because I actually feel like it was kind of the opposite when you were with them. My mom was very, I think she relieved a lot of anxiety through social media. She was actually, in her life, so afraid of it and so unopen to talking about it. And interestingly, with my dad, I think he was the opposite. He wasn't one to post things. He wasn't one to reach out and like, just randomly share things with people. But he was certainly far more aware of it.
You know, I visited Joe in the hospital, you know, kind of in one of the last bumps. He was very upfront about, not chatty about it by any means, but just like, maybe blunt or open, like, here's what's going on.
We all think we know how we're going to do it. And you don't know. In the ideal world, you would have had these beautiful, profound Mitch Albom conversations. If you really want to embrace death, it is what it is, and that has to be ugly and the boring and the scary parts too.
Yeah.
My mom, I think I've heard from a lot of her friends who said, we never got to have that conversation. And I say, yeah, but that wasn't in the cards. She was so afraid of it. I mean, like, the day before she died, she didn't want to talk about it.
Yeah.
She did it exactly right. We're not going to have that conversation, okay? With my dad, I saw my dad 3 times over the spring. The first time I went out, I hadn't seen him in a few months, and he was considerably thinner, considerably older looking, considerably more tired. And I thought, you know, by the end of this trip, I'll write my dad an email. I just want to write him an email saying whatever it is I feel like I should say. And on the last day of that week, I had to go into town to drop something off. He picked me up. We went to Wendy's and got lunch and sat down by the old steel bridge and just ate lunch and didn't say anything. We went back to the house and took a nap. We went over, we did chores. There was all this hay and we were waiting for my grandpa to come back, and my dad said, this is the best part. And he just lay down in the hay. He lay down in the hay and he was sucking on a Jolly Rancher, which he got really into when he was sick. And his dog was there, and I never wrote that email because I was like, I don't need to. There's nothing to say.
Just the experience
it's
of being there.
It's all been
that
said.
Time.
What I came to at the end of that week was, my dad is going to die. I think he's going to die soon because of how sick he looks like he is. But it's going to happen. And if my well-being or my relationship with him hinges on whether or not he's going to die, then it's going to fail because there is no way around that. That can't be the metric of this relationship. It's not about him dying or not. It's about the time you have. It's about quality. When my mom died, we only had 15 minutes with her before she lost consciousness, where she sort of was at peace. It didn't matter at that point whether it was 15 months or 15 years or 15 seconds. All you need is a second, and you think, oh, it's okay.
If you ask a scientist, you know, okay, what's life all about? You strip everything down out of a life. Life is just basically a bunch of organisms competing to make sure their DNA outlives everybody else's DNA. And everything, all of evolution, all of diversity of life, everything can be explained by that simple thing. But if you say that's all human existence is, that to me is selling human existence totally short. to me, it just doesn't explain it all, right? There's something there that I believe is real that is on top of that. Maybe it's just all random and it, you know, has no meaning, or has no meaning besides the meaning we give to it. But maybe that meaning we give to it is enough, you know?
I mean, truly, there's no way to fathom the kinds of things that can happen in the world. But there's something really beautiful about the fact that people keep going.
One thing I've been talking with my wife about lately is the idea of grief being a burden that you carry along with other burdens. That part of surviving grief is you hold it in one hand, and in the other hand, you have place for hope and for the future. And it doesn't make the grief any less. It doesn't make the grief any less heavy. And I think that sometimes that feels overpowering, but we're pretty resilient. I can look at these, you know, 300-year-old larch trees that have escaped fires, you know, years after years, and find beauty in that and hope in that.
What would you do if you saw a caribou today?
I would get a picture of it. And if I couldn't get a picture of it, I'd get a picture of the track. And then I would like get a really giddy feeling, like, holy shit. And then I would go tell Karen, and then I would call the local fishing game biologist, the one who sent me that video, because he would love it as much as I did. And I would feel very lucky. I would feel like I won the lottery.
This episode is dedicated to Kathy, Aaron, Joe, Grandpa Bob, and Lucky the Reindeer. Jesse Brenneman produced this episode. He's a freelancer of many disciplines, living and working these days in Missoula, Montana. Before moving back to Montana, Jesse was a producer for On the Media on WNYC. We'll link to some of his past projects on our website, hbmpodcast.com. And there you'll find some photos of our day in the woods with Ben. And we'll also link to the episode of the podcast that I recorded with Aaron. It's episode 64, and it's called A Shrinking Shadow. Again, find us at hbmpodcast.com. I'm Bethany Denton, and I helped produce and edit this episode. Additional editing from Jeff Emptman. Music by Jesse Brenneman and The Black Spot. Here Be Monsters is distributed by KCRW. Our senior editor there is Nick White. We get additional support for freelance contributions from KCRW's independent producer project. Thanks for listening. More episodes soon.